From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome to the show. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'm Jake Skorheim, your host. Listen, if you are new to the show, if you're just tuning in for the first time, or if you're scanning the dials right now looking for something else, stay here. We're going to have a great show. It's a lot of fun, and you are in very good hands, I promise.
I'm not a smart man, but I know what love is.
All right, we have a really great show tonight, and we do appreciate all the new listeners. We have a lot of new listeners. Ratings are pretty good, but thank you guys so much. That's because you guys are listening, and I really do appreciate it. We work hard to put on a good show here, Matt, myself, Lisa, and we really appreciate you guys are listening. Quick thing, if you want to participate in the show, if you actually want to be part of it, you can. You can hit us up on the Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line, 888-973-5476. We get into a lot of text conversations. Sometimes those end up on the air. Other times, it's just a fun way for us to connect. Obviously, this is kind of a one-way relationship, so I like you guys being able to contact us, and we do read those. We read every one of them. We try to respond to every one of them, and it's a lot of fun. Really quick, also, if you guys get a chance, we make daily videos that you can go and watch. They're not on the radio. These are like just stuff we're doing around the office. You can check those out on my Instagram page. I think we post those also to the Cairo Nights page on mynorthwest.com. I make these with Jason Rantz over on KTTH. The other night, we were talking. The reason I'm leading in with this, because it leads to something we're going to do later on the show. The other night, Jason and I were talking about something that we all talked about here on the show, which is the fact that my wife wants me to get a vasectomy and does not want to have her tubes tied. I have heard you loud and clear. All of you have said, basically, don't be a chump. Get your vasectomy. Get it done. Be a man. I can't make my wife do anything. In fact, she's making me get my vasectomy. So you're saying you can't make your wife get your tubes tied. She's doing the other thing. So anyway, one of my buddies here at work, he's a news director here. His name is Charlie Harger. He comes up to my desk earlier today and he goes, oh, I saw your video with Jason talking about getting a vasectomy. He goes, I think you're overthinking it. You're freaking out. You don't need to freak out about this. It's not a big deal. He apparently has gotten one just a couple years ago. And so I said, Charlie, I don't want to hear about it right now. Tell me about it on the air. So later on this evening, actually next segment, if you're interested, Charlie's going to describe what his vasectomy was like. I've never had one. I've never actually had an in-depth conversation with somebody who's had a vasectomy. So he's going to give me all the ins and outs, and he's going to tell me all about it. So I'm really excited about this. It's going to be next segment, so stick around if you're interested in that. I only know vasectomies from, like, what I've seen on TV.
Grammy, you should really get that cough checked out by a doctor.
No doctors for me. Bunch of lackeys and yes men all toeing the company line. Plus, they botched my vasectomy.
They botched it?
I'm even more potent now.
I don't know if that's possible, but I do know that's like, it can get like, I don't know, it can get scary. People can have them and then they can have them reversed.
Just like always, whatever you want.
Whatever I want. It's never whatever I want. When I said that I wanted to have kids and you said that you wanted me to have a vasectomy, what did I do? When you said that you might want to have kids and I wasn't so sure, who had the vasectomy reversed? And then when you said you definitely didn't want to have kids, who had it reversed back? Snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap. Okay. You've no idea the physical toll the three vasectomies have on a person.
Oh my gosh, that just sounds awful. I hope I don't have to have three vasectomies. I hope I don't. I think once I do it once, it's done. I'm just going to be done with it. So I'm going to talk to Charlie next. I hope he can persuade me that I don't have to worry about it anymore, because it's going to happen. I mean, it's just inevitable at this point. All right, before we get into our newsy stuff, I'm going to play a quick trivia clip for you. We do this every night. You guys can guess on the text line, 888-973-5476. If you get it right, then we're friends. And if you get it wrong, then you have to keep trying until we become friends. And then if you don't get it, if you have no clue what it is, you don't want to guess, you can also just listen to the start of the next hour at 8 p.m. I'm going to give you the answer at the top of the news roundup, and then we'll chat about the movie for just a second. I love this movie. This is one of those movies that anytime it's on TV, back when I used to have cable, I would watch it from any point in the movie that it was on and through till the end, because it was just one of those movies that you can watch at any point, and it's fantastic, and it always feels great. There's always a great sense of satisfaction at the end. So I'm going to play this clip for you. Feel free to guess on the text line. Very best of luck.
Dear Red, if you're reading this, you've gotten out. And if you've come this far, Maybe you're willing to come a little further. You remember the name of the town, don't you?
Cihuatanejo.
I could use a good man to help me get my project on wheels. I'll keep an eye out for you and the chessboard ready. Remember, Red, hope is a good thing, maybe the best of things, and no good thing ever dies. I will be hoping that this letter finds you and finds you well. Your friend, Andy.
Get busy living or get busy dying.
Man, such a great movie. All right, take your guesses. Let me know. Matt, let's get into some newsy things. I read this story like 5 minutes before we got on the air. And I'm like, I got a lot of questions about this one. I'm interested in this one. This is kind of a story that I only read about in Seattle. Only happens in Seattle. Listen to this headline. Seattle driver runs over tents on downtown sidewalk. James Lynch, who's a fantastic reporter here, he's a good pal. He wrote this story, and I just have a million questions. I'm going to read to you a little bit of this story, and then I'm going to just ask some questions to you guys. You might have questions on this as well. And we just did a story yesterday about police and pursuit laws that kind of drove me nuts. So that shop owner in Shoreline, whose shop was robbed, police showed up as the robbers were leaving and did not pursue. This here is another case where there is pursuit that's good. Listen, just listen to the details of this. It's going to drive you crazy. According, this is James Lynch's story. Good job, James. According to the Seattle Police Department, 3rd Avenue and James Street in downtown Seattle is a popular place for the unhoused. Again, you can read about this on MyNorthwest.com. It was at that intersection Tuesday night at around 11 p.m. Officers witnessed a gray Acura SUV drive onto the curb and over tents, then keep going. This is horrible. So imagine that, just an SUV swerving onto the sidewalk, driving over tents. And officers witnessed that. I underlined that in the story here. Officers witnessed it, which means they were right there watching it happen. Officers pursued the Seattle driver, but abandoned the chase when they learned that the tents were empty and no one was injured. But then the driver came back. Shortly thereafter, that same vehicle returned to the scene, and the occupants reportedly fired multiple shots at the scene. SPD Officer Brian Pritchard said, while investigating the shooting, police were unable to find any shell casings or property damage and no cooperative witnesses. Quote, there were people at the scene when this occurred, and officers attempted to talk to people, and no one wanted to come forward to talk to officers, Pritchard said. Police don't have a better description of the vehicle. They also don't have a license plate number or a description of the suspect. Anyone with information is asked to call 911. Like a million things just went wrong there. In my head, I'm just thinking like, all right, you have police officers already watching this. Like, what kind of city are we? I don't live in Seattle anymore because I'm smart and I've moved out of the city to a civilized place where you can have a family. How is it possible that police officers, SPD is watching as a gray SUV, a gray Acura SUV drives onto the curb, runs over tents? My assumption is, like, here's some questions I had just when I was reading this. My assumption is, one, the SUV driver probably did not possess X-ray vision. And so when they drove over said tents, they did not know that they were empty. If I was driving by a bunch of tents on a sidewalk, I would just assume that there were people inside sleeping there for the night. I don't know how they drove over those tents and thought, oh, these are just empty tents, so I'm just going to run over these empty tents. So clearly that driver would be a danger to the public, right? And then the police just stop pursuing him because they have found out somehow, I guess maybe there's a second officer on the scene who goes and looks in the tents really quick and goes, oh, guys, like, and on the radio, I'm just assuming all this because we just don't have that much information. On the radio, lets the pursuing officers know, hey, guys, don't worry about it. Nobody in the tents. And then they just peel off for some reason. They abandon the chase. That's what the article says. Why would you abandon a chase? This person just drove up on the sidewalk. There's people in those tents. Doesn't matter what you think about unhoused or if you call them homeless or whatever. I don't like people sleeping on sidewalks. I think it's a bad thing. I also don't like people driving onto sidewalks to hit people who are sleeping on sidewalks. That person's crazy who's in that car. And then further, they come back. What kind of a nut job is number one, drives onto the sidewalk, over tents, and then runs away from the police chase, and then stop. Then the guy flips around. The guy thinks it's a good idea to flip around and come back and then fire shots at the scene. So they know all this stuff happened. How is it possible that they don't know where this SUV is? They don't even have a license plate number. If I'm a cop, like one of the first things I'm doing, if I'm following somebody, if I'm pursuing a vehicle that has just driven onto the sidewalk to hit people in a tent, presumably, I don't know that that was what they were intending, but that's what I would assume they were intending. If I'm a police officer, I go, hey, by the way, we should probably get the license plate on this vehicle. Especially when they decide, like at some point they had to make the decision, we're going to abandon this chase because nobody was in the tents. So I guess the person who drives on the sidewalk is just, I don't know, whatever. Let's just let them go. That doesn't compute to me, but at least if I'm in the car, I'd go like, hey, by the way, why don't we just like jot down the license plate number just in case this guy flips back and comes back around and fires some shots? Wouldn't it be nice if we knew where this SUV was? Or we could at least like look it up in the DMV? How is it possible that so many things went wrong here? All I have is questions. I read that article and all I have is questions. So SPD, if you're listening, I would like to know why you stopped pursuing that vehicle. Because in my head, I'm thinking that vehicle is going to be a danger to somebody. If they're willing to drive onto the sidewalk, they're a danger to the public. That's what we're always told. Like, you can't pursue these vehicles unless we think they're a danger to the public. Well, yeah, if you drive onto the sidewalk and try to hit people, that seems like that person's a danger. So you got to get them off the road. And then two, when they come back and they start firing shots, why again don't we know what the license plate of this vehicle is? And why don't we know where they are? Why didn't police pursue them then? Were police even on the scene the second time? I don't know. Lots of questions. I would like answered from the SPD, if they're listening. All right, let's move on. Speaking of crazy stories, we don't even have time to do this one justice. O.J. Simpson passed away today. You might be super sad about that. I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. O.J. Simpson passed away today. He was 76. He died of cancer. Obviously, the guy was infamous in his life. He did a lot of amazing things on the football field. He became super, super famous when he probably was involved in the most famous murder case in the history of cases. I can't think of another one that got more press. He was on trial for the murder of his ex-wife, Nicole Brown, and her friend, Ron Goldman, in 1994. There is so much, like, when I was looking back at this, just doing, like, just a little bit of research on this, because so much of it I already had in my head, even though I was very young at the time. I would have been like 10. So I wasn't even really aware. I was aware that O.J. Simpson was on TV every day. I didn't understand why he was on TV because my parents were sheltering me and probably not letting me know that this guy was being charged with these brutal murders, which was a good thing. They shouldn't have let me know. But in the years since, I have grown up and I have seen these many different stories on him. They would always do like on the anniversary of the acquittal, they would always play that. There was also a really, really great series on FX called The People versus O.J. Simpson. Did you see that one, Matt?
Yeah, I remember that. It's a good series.
Cuba Gooding Jr. starred as O.J. Really, really well done. Like, really, really well done. And but it just reminds you, like, just this was such a sensational story. So many people were into it. Here's Larry King during his show back in 1993, I believe this took place. He's live on the air when they get news that there's a white Bronco running down I-5, like on a police. There's a police chase down I-5, and they think that O.J. Simpson's inside.
I'm going to have to interrupt this call. I understand we're going to go to a live picture in Los Angeles. Is that correct? Okay. This is Interstate 5, and this is courtesy of KCALR, one of our L.A. affiliates. Police believe that O.J. Simpson is in that car.
So that's like the famous white Bronco that everybody remembers. And then we move into the courtroom scene. You remember Johnny Cochran, his defense attorney? He was really great at coming up with, like, you know, really, like, clever turns of phrase. And he clearly made an impact with the jury because, you know, O.J. was acquitted.
You've been seeing me for a year. If I put this knit cap on, who am I? I'm still Johnny Cochran with a knit cap. And if you look at O.J. Simpson over there, and he has a rather large head, O.J. Simpson in a knit cap from two blocks away is still O.J. Simpson. It's no disguise. It's no disguise. It makes no sense. It doesn't fit. If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit. When I remember watching that, when I thought about that, it's funny how your brain just kind of like puts these things in different places. I always thought that if it doesn't fit, you must acquit was associated with the glove.
Yeah.
Do you remember they had him try on that glove in the courtroom?
Yeah.
And it didn't fit. I thought that's what they were talking about.
Yeah, for the longest time I did too.
This was a knit cap they were talking about. And in the courtroom, obviously you guys remember, like, OJ had to wear a latex glove so he wouldn't mess with the evidence. A latex glove over his hand. And then over the top of that, they tried to make him, the prosecution team, the prosecutors tried to make him put on the glove that they found left at the scene, and it obviously didn't fit because he had a glove on underneath it. And so that was that. I just assumed that was that if it doesn't fit, you must acquit. But no, it was about a knit cap. And then, of course, the entire world lost their minds or were very, very excited when the verdict came out. Here's a little clip of the verdict.
All right, Mr. Simpson, would you please stand and face the jury? Mrs. Robertson.
Superior Court of California, County of Los Angeles, in the matter of the people of the state of California versus Orenthal James Simpson, case number BA097211. We, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant Orenthal James Simpson not guilty of the crime of murder in violation of Penal Code Section 187A, a felony upon Nicole Brown Simpson, a human being, as charged in count one of the information.
He was also obviously acquitted of the other charge against Ron Goldman. This was a great, and I didn't know this, but Oprah did a live show at the time. This is how big news this was. Every single person in the world was watching, and it was so big that they were literally doing shows about watching it. Oprah was doing a live studio audience, basically sit down. We're going to film you all. We're going to mic everybody up, and we're going to get your reactions live as the verdict is read. So this was Oprah on the air live as it was read.
It is shortly before noon Chicago time. And history is in the making. By the time you all see this, you will already know the OJ verdict. But we, just like the rest of the country, are waiting to hear it live for the very first time. So you will be seeing this audience's reactions as the verdict is being read.
Superior Court of California, County of Los Angeles, in the matter of the people of the state of California versus Orenthal James Simpson, case number BA097211. We, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant Orenthal James Simpson not guilty of the crime of murder in violation of Penal Code Section 187A, a felony upon Nicole Brown Simpson, a human being, as charged in count one of the information.
Really crazy. Mixed reactions from the crowd there. Obviously, some people excited, some people not so excited. But O.J. Simpson passed away today, 76, from cancer. Probably, I would guess, the last time that he is the top news story in the world, but who knows? All right, we got a lot of stuff coming up tonight. Matt, tell them what we got.
All right, coming up on tonight's edition of Cairo Nights, Cairo News Radio's own Charlie Harder joins us to talk about a topic that's a bit below the belt. Also, one of Mariners baseball's biggest fans, our own Aaron Granillo, shares his thoughts on that major betting scandal. And Lisa Brooks joins us for the news roundup. That's all headed your way on tonight's edition of Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to the show. All right, I have a very special guest on with me right now, and I'm excited to talk to this guy. The topic is a little uncomfortable, so if you're a person who gets squeamish, or if you, I don't think this matters if you have small kids in the car, I think it's probably fine. We're not bad people. We're not going to say nasty things, but it is kind of more of an adult topic, I think. I have Charlie Harger on with me right now. He is the news director for Cairo News Radio. Charlie, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Jake.
Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, no, it's always fun. I love listening to the show.
We have a lot of conversations. You and I talk a lot in the newsroom. Yeah. I've never had you on the show before. You're not usually around this late, so thank you for blessing my audience.
Of course. You are welcome to be blessed by me anytime.
Thank you. All right, so the reason that you and I are talking, you came up to my desk the other earlier today, actually, and you were saying, hey, I saw your video. I make these little videos with Jason Rantz. We just talk about whatever's going on in our life. 2 or 3 minutes, you can check them on Instagram or wherever you get your videos. And the topic of the video was that my wife recently told me that after we have our fourth kid, if she has to end up having a C-section, which is a possibility because she's had one in the past, if she has to have a C-section for this kid, the doctor was telling her that, you know, if she doesn't want to have any more kids, they could just tie her tubes up. I was really excited about this because I'm nervous about getting a vasectomy. And then I said, well, this is great news. And then she said, no, I don't think I'm going to do it because I think you need to give, I don't know what her reasoning was. She basically said, like, you need to actually do something physically for these kids as well. And I was like, well, I think I've already done quite a bit. I created half of them, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure that flies.
Well, she didn't seem to think so either. And so she was saying, no, I think you should get the vasectomy. So I'm very nervous about a vasectomy. So you come up to my desk.
Mrs. Skorheim is right, Jake. She is so dang right. You don't even know.
So you think I should not have her get, I mean, I can't have her do anything. I should not continue to push for her to please get her tubes tied.
Do not give this a second thought. So I have two great kids. Yeah. I love my family, and I love that I was able to do a little something that was able to help prevent a lot of anxiety and uncertainty for a small family. So I went to a prominent local vasectomy doctor. I'll just say it's Dr. Snip. You've heard him all over the airwaves for years. And this was almost 10 years ago, I want to say, and I was nervous. Oh, man, it's scary, right?
Before you went in, did you have somebody who was older and wiser like yourself talking to me come and tell you that it was going to be okay? Or did you go into it feeling like, no matter what anyone says to me,
I'm doing this.
And, well, everyone tells me that it's going to be fine. Everybody says, oh, just like get a frozen bag of peas. Ha, ha, ha. And I just go, I don't know, this sounds like a very scary situation.
Sure, because
uncomfortable.
You're thinking about, okay, this happens in a little bit of a sensitive area.
Yeah, quite.
I understand the concern. I had done a little research on this, and even back then, this is about a decade ago, I'm thinking, this doesn't seem like that big of a deal if you read up on it. Maybe 20, 30 years ago, it was a bit more involved. Dude, there were two little incisions made that they didn't even need to make a stitch when doing this.
Here's a question.
Yeah.
Do you get knocked out?
No. I mean, it's
really?
Like a little numbing cream that is used in a spot. And
how do they put the cream on?
Well, like with a Q-tip or something.
Okay.
Then I believe after that, after the numbing on the skin occurs, then like there might be like a little injection of something. But you're leaning back. You're
an
basically
injection. You mean like a needle?
I don't want to say that word because I already see the fear in your eyes, Jake. It's okay. It's
a real fear. You can hear it in my voice.
You're
too.
Not having to look at it. He's like, hey, look at that over there, and you know,
and then
two little,
and he pokes me on two.
But you're not feeling it because you've already been numbed up.
So he's already given me some topical anesthesia.
Exactly.
Whatever the thing
yeah.
is.
I don't want to say the word because I can't really say it well. Anesthetic. Yeah.
Sure. Anesthesia.
Yeah. I think if you're listening right now, you know what Jake means.
Yeah. It means he's going to make me not feel things.
Yeah. Yeah. And
but
you
then
don't
he's going to poke
things.
Me with a needle, yeah. according to you.
I think you're making a big deal out of this, Jake. It's perhaps a needle. You're not going to see it.
Question for you.
Yes.
This is kind of a strange conversation to be having in front of everyone, in front of our listeners, but we're here. When I walk in, am I putting on one of those gowns? Am I wearing a gown or do I just drop my pants?
You're putting on a gown.
You're putting on a gown. It's a sterile environment, right? They want to make sure everything's okay.
And by the way, Mrs. Skorheim is in there with you.
She doesn't want to be in there with me.
Yeah.
She does not want to be in there with me.
Your mom could go in there with you.
Maybe. That's so weird. Don't suggest that. Don't talk about my mother. No, my mother's not coming with me to get the vasectomy. That would be very strange. So my wife could be there, but she won't be. She's as squeamish as I am. Like, she's never gone to any of my kids' vasectomies. Not my kids' vasectomies, my kids' circumcisions. She never goes to any of those.
Yeah.
I go to those.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's my duty to sit there and watch because I want to make sure that everything's handled correctly and that they don't, you know.
Because you're an expert?
I just don't want them to, like, take off more than they need to. And so, like, with my vasectomy, though, there's nobody controlling that. There's no, like, am I... Do they knock me out?
No, you are perfectly awake. You're leaning back. Jake, this is perhaps a 15-minute procedure, and I'm being generous when I say that. It's probably even shorter than that. Basically, all the doctor is doing, he numbs you up. That is the longest portion. Then there's just this tiniest of incisions. There are two vas deferens tubes that they need to...
Two cuts.
Yeah, two cuts.
One on the left,
one on the right.
Okay. What about the middle one? I'm just kidding. Just joking.
They pull out the vas deferens. It's
like a
little tube. And Dr. Snip looks over at the bride, goes, hey, you see this? My wife was laughing hysterically, thought it was very funny.
Your wife actually watched.
Oh, yeah. She thought it was great. She thought, after all she has been through,
giving birth to them, this is nothing.
This is nothing. So
here's a side question real fast. Why is it that for our wives, the things that we go through painfully with our bodies is hilarious? But if I were to sit there and laugh at my wife in the middle of her birth, middle of the birth of our kids, if I'm sitting there going like, look at that.
You are comparing basically pulling out a little angel hair pasta to having a human head come through
it's
your body.
It's not a totally fair comparison.
It is not a fair comparison,
okay,
Jake.
That's fair enough. All right, it's not a fair comparison. So they're pulling out pasta.
Yes.
And then they, what do? They just... They tie it up?
Yeah, basically snip, snip, tie it up. I'm not sure if they cauterize it. I don't really remember that, but I just remember it going so quickly. I'm like, wait, I thought there was more. No, there's not. They don't even have to stitch it back up. The incision is so small. And it takes longer for them to counsel you and say, you know, you are going to be sterile the rest of your life, yada, yada, yada.
They've got to spend here, sign here, sign here. Yeah.
I'm like, heck yes.
You know what? It doesn't always turn out that way, according to Seinfeld.
Premier, you should really get that cough checked out by a doctor.
No doctors for me. Bunch of lackeys and yes men all toeing the company line. Plus, they botched my vasectomy.
They botched it?
I'm even more potent now.
So dumb. And I actually heard, this is another thing that I heard. You can actually get these reversed now. I don't know if this was the way when you were...
I'm not doing that. No.
Very, I imagine it could be a very scary process.
Yeah.
Just like always, whatever you want.
Whatever I want. It's never whatever I want. When I said that I wanted to have kids and you said that you wanted me to have a vasectomy, what did I do? You said that you might want to have kids, and I wasn't so sure who had the vasectomy reversed. And then when you said you definitely didn't want to have kids, who had it reversed back? Snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap. Okay. You've no idea the physical toll the three vasectomies have on a person.
So stupid. I don't know why I'm so nervous about this. I mean, I understand the argument that you're making. I understand the description you're giving me right now. It makes sense in my head that it's not a big deal, but why does it feel like such a big deal? Because I can no longer sire children. I don't know if that's playing into it. I've already made four sons.
I know you are a powerful, powerful man.
I'm king of the castle. Like, you don't find
anybody.
Master
of your domain.
I am master of my domain. I look at my wife and she goes, here's another son. That's the way it works. I'm very potent. And so now the idea of it not being that way, let me ask you one last question.
Yes.
Because I don't know what the after effects are. Okay, so you get the thing done. Maybe ice it for a day or two, whatever. You felt pretty good pretty quick.
Yeah. They don't want you lifting the kids or doing anything crazy for 48, 72 hours, something like that. So it's really a good chance to sit on your butt. A lot of guys do this before the March Madness tournament, so they're able to watch the games.
Oh,
yeah, but, you know, we, of course, have all sorts of NBA playoffs coming up. Perhaps you want to watch some golf. I
should have done it before the Masters. You're right. That would have been smart. All right, my last question. This is a really selfish, dumb question, but afterwards, when other things happen, is everything still work? Am I going to go like, wow, this is 60% of what I expected it to be?
It's 100%, but I must say that is only in an activity that it should be used for its intended purpose, so I wouldn't really know.
Yeah, that's right, unless you're trying to have kids. All right. Well, Charlie, thank you so much. I don't know that you've made me feel better, but at least I know what I'm going to experience when I go in.
You get a prize at the end, Jake. You didn't even want to talk about the best part.
Only if you go to a certain place.
I think most doctors are giving you a prize. I got a fantastic prize at the end. It was like going to the dentist when you're a kid.
What did you get?
I got a Leatherman tool.
To remind yourself that you're still a man, right?
And it's useful. Yes.
And you can do a lot of stuff around the house with it.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to go through with it. I'm sure I'll get it done. I'll probably feel fine on the other end.
Do you want me to go with you?
Maybe. Is that a genuine offer?
Sure. Absolutely.
All right. Well, I'll run it by my wife and see. As long as she doesn't want to go, I would love someone to hold my hand through the process.
Okay. I'll look into your eyes as it happens.
All right. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to the show. I want to play this clip for you really fast. I thought this was really cool. A golfer, his name is Scottie Scheffler. I don't know if you guys follow golf. I've gotten into it recently because I watched that Netflix documentary, Full Swing. Have you seen that, Matt? That docuseries? What's that?
I didn't know this existed. Tell me about it.
It's fantastic. It's really, really good. It's made by the same guys. Have you ever seen, there's another docuseries on Netflix, which is, I'm not joking, the best show on TV right now. And it's called Drive to Survive. It's about F1 racing.
Oh, really? I haven't seen that.
I think they have 5 or 6 seasons.
Interesting.
I knew absolutely nothing about F1 racing.
Yeah, I don't either.
And then I watched this series just one night. I turn it on, and what they do in the series is basically they follow around. I don't know if you know about anything about F1. I certainly did not. But it's a massive motorsport all around the world. It's like the highest level of race car driving you can be as an F1 driver. There's only like 20 of them. There's 10 teams. They outfit 2 cars for each race. There's these like super races all around the world. They race in Japan. They race in Qatar. They race like everywhere in the world. These teams travel around. Anyway, they highlight these guys, these race car drivers, and the teams, and the team, the team captains, and the guys who are actually like running the team managers, and the entire world is just so interesting. So, based on the success of that, they then did this Full Swing documentary, also set in the world of pro golf, and they talk to all these pro golfers and they follow them throughout a season and highlight them in each episode. So, I couldn't more highly recommend both Drive to Survive and Full Swing. So, one of the characters that they feature on Full Swing is Scottie Scheffler. He's one of the best golfers in the world. As you guys know, the Masters is going on. They asked Scottie Scheffler about golf. And they said, because he's ranked number one right now, like by far in the world, he's ranked number one. They said, are you defined by this sport? And he had an interesting answer.
A lot of number one players in the world have admitted that they've had to be selfish with their time. They've had to work very hard because they were just about compulsive to stay on top. How would you say golf, where does it fit in defining you as a person right now?
Hopefully it doesn't define me too much because golf definitely is a selfish sport. You know, you're out there by yourself. And when you're at the peak of your game, you know, people need stuff from you a lot of the time. And you have to be selfish with your time. And it's not easy to say no, but you have to learn how to say no to certain people. And because ultimately, when you come out to a golf tournament, you're here to compete and you're here to do your best, and you can't really get caught up in all the stuff that's going on around you. And so, I'm hoping it doesn't define me too much because, I feel like I say it a bunch. Golf's something that I do; it's a tremendously huge part of my life, but it doesn't define me as a person. It's just something that I do, and I happen to be good at it some weeks. And you know, I come in here and you guys ask all nice questions, and then the next week I'm bad at it, and then some of the questions are viewed more negatively, and that's just kind of the ebb and flow of competing in front of people all the time.
The cool thing was he then was asked, the follow-up question was, what are you defined by? And the thing that he talked, we don't have time to play the clip right now, but the thing that he talked about that he's defined by, again, he's the number one golfer in the world, a very easy thing to be defined by. But he says, no, he really thinks he's more defined by his faith. He's a guy who, he goes to church and he says, that's the thing that I want my kids to know me as. And, you know, golf is just this thing that I'm fortunate to be able to play and be good at. All right, we got a lot coming up. We got the news roundup coming up next. We got that trivia clip, which a million people took a guess at. Most got it right. We'll give you the answer to that if you didn't know. And a lot of other great stuff. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Chiro Nights.